This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine spending something like $145 billion on cutting-edge infrastructure, only to just turn around and become a discount landlord for your own biggest competitors. Because that is exactly what Meta did today.
Yeah, it completely upends how we evaluate tech monopolies.
Yeah.
I mean, we're essentially looking at a structural collapse of the old hierarchy, you know, where whoever owned the most hardware just won the game by default.
All right. Which brings us to welcome to today's deep dive. We are tearing into a single, just incredibly dense stack of sources today. We're looking at the July 3, 2026 AI Daily Briefing.
And it is a massive document.
It really is. It compiles market movements, product release notes from heavyweights like Meta, Google, xAI, and Anthropic, plus these massive investment rounds and some really highly critical commentary from the person who provided today's materials.
Yeah, it's a ton of data, but it paints a very specific picture of a singular paradigm-shifting day in the industry.
Exactly. And our mission today is to decode this specific day, a day where the entire AI power structure essentially flipped upside down. I mean, we went from hardware monopolies holding all the cards to autonomous coding agents quietly running in the background. So we need to figure out how you, the listener, can strategically navigate this entirely new landscape, because there were so many insights here that directly impact how you do business tomorrow. Okay, let's unpack this.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we aren't just going to list off a series of news items and tech specs today. We are going to connect the dots to show why the fundamental rules of AI are being aggressively rewritten right in front of us.
Yeah. And to do that, we have to start at the foundational layer, which is hardware. The briefing highlights this massive pivot from Meta. They're launching something called Meta Compute.
Right.
So Meta has this staggering AI infrastructure budget, which is projected in the briefing at $145 billion. That's about $200 trillion for the year. And now they are taking their excess computing power and literally selling it directly to outside customers.
And the market reaction to this was violent. I mean, when the Bloomberg report hit, Meta's stock jumped over 10%.
Wow.
Yeah, but look at the collateral damage. The cloud providers that historically rented compute to Meta, companies like CoreWeave and Nivius, they saw their stocks completely plummet. CoreWeave's dropped 10.8%, and Nivius fell 12.4% in a single day.
It's like finding out your biggest tenant just bought the apartment building next door and is actively undercutting your rent. But wait, I have to push back here. I don't buy that Meta is doing this just as some clever defensive maneuver.
How do you mean?
Well, if they flood the market with cheap compute, aren't they actively devaluing the very infrastructure they just spent $145 billion building? Like, why commoditize your own advantage?
Because the alternative is letting that unbelievably expensive hardware just sit idle while waiting for their internal model training to catch up.
Oh, I see.
Right. By turning unused compute into an immediate revenue stream, Meta signals to the market that their capital expenditure is under control. They are showing Wall Street that they aren't just, you know, lighting money on fire. They are monetizing their own excess capacity.
So it's about optics and immediate cash flow.
Exactly. Yes. But it creates a massive supply chain risk for everyone else. There's a great note in our briefing from former lawmaker Kyungjin Kim, who points out exactly how unstable this vendor ecosystem just became.
Right.
Think about it from a business perspective. If you are a company renting compute from a traditional cloud provider, that provider is now bleeding revenue because of Meta's pivot. So to survive, they might have to start selling compute to your direct competitors or just drastically change their pricing models.
Which means you, listening right now, need to seriously audit your company's vendor contracts. If your cloud provider suddenly loses their biggest client, do you have a clause protecting you from unexpected price hikes or supply cuts?
Yeah, it's crucial.
You might think you're just renting digital server space, but you are suddenly exposed to a very volatile physical commodity market.
And if compute is essentially becoming a discounted, flooded market, which clears up the hardware bottleneck, we have to look at what happens to the software.
Right.
The models themselves are suddenly breaking through traditional borders.
The open weight rebellion is accelerating. We definitely see this in the briefing with China's Zipu and their newly released model, GLM 5.2. As of July 1st, this model just hit number one on the Artificial Analysis IQ V4.1 leaderboard with a score of 51.
Beating out some massive competitors.
Yeah, beating out models like Minimax, DeepSeek, and Kimi.
The underlying architecture on this is staggering. It's a 744 billion parameter model using a mixture of experts, or MoE structure.
Wait, for anyone not spending their weekends reading AI white papers, MoE basically means the model doesn't fire up its entire massive brain for every single question, right?
Right, exactly.
It acts like a router, sending your prompt only to the specialized subnetworks that are needed for that specific task, which makes it highly efficient.
Spot on.
Yeah.
And it features a 1 million token context window. So it can hold the equivalent of several thick books in its immediate memory for just a single prompt.
Yeah.
But the most disruptive part isn't the architecture. It is the distribution strategy.
Yeah.
Zipu released this under an unrestricted MIT license globally. No regional locks, no usage restrictions whatsoever.
Let's look at the timing here, because there is a fascinating timeline detail in the sources. Zipu released this model right after U.S. export controls formally blocked access to Claude Fable 5 in certain regions.
Yeah.
And looking at this purely from a market dynamics perspective, setting any geopolitical debates aside entirely, did a regulatory wall just accidentally create a much stronger open source competitor?
Yeah.
Because it seems like a massive unintended consequence.
Oh, it is a textbook example of market physics. Our briefing includes some sharp analysis from lawyer Kunjin Kim, who notes that the power to release a model with zero restrictions is currently spreading much faster than the power to restrict good models.
Wow.
Yeah, export controls don't actually stop the technology from progressing. They just change the user's available options.
The demand doesn't disappear. It just routes around the obstacle.
Exactly. Because it is an open-weight model with an MIT license, users in restricted regions can simply download it and run it themselves on all that cheap compute we just talked about. They bypass the regulatory choke point entirely.
Here's where it gets really interesting. This represents a massive shift in how you should evaluate AI for your business.
Yeah, it does.
Moving forward, you shouldn't just be asking your IT team, hey, which company made this model? The primary question is now, does this model's license legally allow our specific workflow? Because the open models are suddenly beating the closed restricted models, and they come with zero legal baggage or regional red tape.
Right. And with abundant, cheap compute and unrestricted world-class models freely available, the barrier to entry has just evaporated. The bottleneck is no longer access to AI. The bottleneck is what you can actually build with it.
Which explains this absolute flood of autonomous agents in the briefing. We are officially moving from chatbots that talk to you to autonomous agents that do things for you.
Yes.
The briefing outlines a simultaneous explosion of tool releases from Google, xAI, and Anthropic. Let's start with Google. Their Gemini Omni Flash model is now available via API.
Meaning developers can plug that intelligence directly into their own software.
Mm.
And this is a major leap in multimodal generation. You can feed it text, up to 7 images, and video. And it generates a brand new video with synchronized audio.
That's wild.
And they are embedding a SynthEV watermark on all outputs so you can track its origin. Plus, it outputs 720p resolution clips. Oh, and they rolled out a Gemini Spark macOS beta for UF Ultra subscribers that integrates directly with applications like Canva, Dropbox, and OpenTable.
But let's talk about the economics of this for a second, because the xAI release is what really caught my eye. They launched a voice agent builder that allows you to create customer service or sales call agents using natural language.
Right, no coding required.
Exactly. You just type what you want the agent to do. It gives you over 80 different voices, voice cloning, and free phone numbers. And it costs 5 cents per audio minute.
Crazy.
Like, why has the cost dropped so drastically?
Because the underlying the process of the model actually computing the response has become incredibly efficient. And as we discussed earlier, the compute itself is getting cheaper.
Right.
When you strip away the massive overhead of traditional call centers, the real estate, the management software, and just pay for the raw data processing, the marginal cost of a phone call approaches zero. You are paying for server ticks, not human hours.
It is vastly cheaper than any human call center on Earth. But the release that actually made me anxious was from Anthropic, Claude Code version 2.1.198. They are calling it Claude in Chrome.
Ah, the background agents.
Yeah, let's translate some of the jargon here for a minute. The briefing says these agents live in your work tree. So for the non-developers listening, a work tree is basically the Active Directory on your computer where all your source code files are stored.
Right.
The agent watches what you are doing, writes code, commits the code, which means it officially saves its changes to the project history, and then it automatically opens a draft pull request, which is essentially a formal proposal to merge its new code into the main project.
Yeah, it's fully autonomous.
Wait, I have to stop here. Claude is just writing, saving, and proposing changes to a company's core software repository completely on its own while the human developer is off getting coffee? Doesn't that sound like a massive security vulnerability? What if it hallucinates a huge bug that breaks the whole platform?
It sounds terrifying if you are stuck in the old paradigm of software development. But a massive shift is happening. We are shifting away from a stop and ask for permission model.
Okay, walk me through how that actually works under the hood.
Previously, an AI would write a small block of code, stop, and wait for you to approve it before moving to the next line. It was highly supervised. Now we are moving to a finish the job and ask for review model.
Interesting.
The system works autonomously, but utilizes specific notification hooks built into the software. The briefing mentions a hook called Agent Needs Input if the AI gets genuinely stuck on a logic problem, and it uses Agent Completed when the draft pull request is ready.
So it's like a junior developer finishing an entire feature and leaving the folder on your desk for final sign-off?
Exactly. But the source material includes a very strict warning about this new workflow. Humans must do a final check on that draft pull request before merging it into the main project.
That makes sense.
Yeah, if you blindly click approve without a manual review, any bad commits the agent made go straight through to production. So the human's role fundamentally changes. You are no longer the initial creator typing out the lines of code. You become the final editor.
It's wild to think about the speed at which enterprise video production, customer service phone trees, and now highly complex back-end software development are just being turned into simple natural language conversations.
Right. What's fascinating here is that sheer speed is exactly what is driving the next major trend in our briefing. If AI can now code itself, make videos, and answer phones autonomously, where are the venture capitalists and massive corporations placing their bets next? Like, what is the new defensive moat when the software itself is essentially free?
Well, we have some massive funding rounds in the briefing that show exactly where the smart money is flowing. First, Together AI, which is a platform for open model training and inference, they just hit an $8.3 billion valuation after an $800 million Series C.
Which is huge.
Yeah, that is up from $3.3 billion just last year. But the second one is even more telling, Venice AI. They just became a $1 billion unicorn after a $65 million Series A led by Dragonfly.
And the reason why they got that valuation is the crucial part. It's privacy. They have 3.5 million users processing 1.3 trillion tokens a month. Their entire selling point is that they do not log your prompts, and all conversational data is saved locally on the user's device.
This is a direct response to the enterprise anxiety we just discussed with Claude, isn't it?
Absolutely. If you are going to let an AI touch your proprietary code base or your sensitive financial data, you need absolute assurance that your private information isn't being scraped to train the next version of a public model.
And corporations are taking this very seriously. The briefing notes that Cisco just deployed AI agents to all 90,000 of their employees.
Wow, 90,000.
Yeah. Their finance department is already using them to draft business reports and investor relations documents. You simply do not feed sensitive investor data into an agent unless you have a completely sealed privacy moat.
But the most fascinating shift in capital is happening in hardware, specifically in China. The briefing details how giants like Huawei, Tencent, Baidu, and Alibaba are practically ignoring the physical bodies of robots right now.
Really?
Yeah. Instead, they are fiercely competing to build the robot brains, the embedded intelligence systems and development tools. Over half of the 43.8 billion RMB in domestic embedded intelligence funding went straight to these brain systems.
I need to dig into this because why would you ignore the physical robot? Isn't the physical hardware the hardest part of robotics?
It used to be. But the physical components, the joints, the servos, the metal chassis, they're becoming rapidly commoditized. The supply chains for manufacturing physical parts are incredibly mature. If you build a slightly better mechanical arm, someone can reverse engineer and mass produce it cheaper in 6 months. The physical body is just a vessel.
So the premium product is the intelligence making the decisions.
Exactly. The ability for a robot to walk into a totally new environment, recognize an object it has never seen before, and autonomously plan a sequence of actions to manipulate that object without human intervention that requires a massive, sophisticated intelligence system.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that brain is incredibly hard to build and deeply defensible. If you own the brain, you control the entire robotic ecosystem, regardless of whose metal legs it is walking on.
Right. The body is a commodity, but the intelligence is the monopoly.
I want to bring this all together using a final brilliant observation from former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim in our source material.
Right.
Because autonomous agents can now write code, the code itself is no longer the competitive moat. Investors aren't asking how complex your software is anymore. They're asking about your margins and your defenses.
Because if the AI can code it, anyone can build it. The barrier to entry for software is approaching zero.
Exactly. As former lawmaker Kyung Jin Kim points out, the real moat is experience, trust, and data. The core metric of a company's value is no longer the difficulty of the code they wrote, but whether they actually solved the user's problem through superior execution and planning.
So, what does this all mean? Let's synthesize this for you, the listener. It means your value in the marketplace, whether you are an enterprise company or an individual employee, is no longer your raw ability to write a Python script or edit a video or answer a customer service ticket.
Right.
The AI can do that, and it can do it for pennies. Your true value is your trusted relationship with your clients and your unique proprietary data that the AI simply does not have access to.
The foundational layer of the entire tech economy has completely shifted.
It really has. Just to recap the sheer velocity of this single day, we went from Meta fundamentally shaking up the hardware market by selling off their excess compute to China's open weight models breaking through regulatory walls. Then we saw autonomous AI agents writing code and generating video completely on their own.
Yeah, leading to the harsh realization that trust and private data are the only real defensive moats left in this industry. This raises an important question, though. When the bedrock shifts this drastically, how do we rebuild our daily workflows to stay relevant?
And that is exactly what I want to leave you with today. A lingering thought to mull over. If AI models are becoming essentially free, thanks to open weights and cheap compute, and they're completely capable of executing complex tasks autonomously, we are moving from an economy of creators to an economy of editors and curators.
Right.
Tomorrow, when you log on for work, don't ask yourself how you can do your specific task faster. The AI has already solved the speed problem. Ask yourself, how can I build a system of trust and a pipeline of unique data that an AI cannot replicate? Where does your specific human intuition fit into a workflow that is entirely automated? Because the environment has fundamentally changed, and it's time to figure out what kind of structure you are going to build on this new ground. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into the July 3rd AI briefing. Keep questioning the systems around you, and we will catch you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.